So, Paddy, top of the morning to you.
Thank you very much
for agreeing to spend a few minutes talking to us about your Yarborough cancer. First of all, when did you discover Llangollen and why did you decide to put down roots here?
I guess I was on a bit of a tour. I was catching up with some old friends in Angers and in Rennes. So I was on a road trip with my dog and we had no plan. We just decided we'd follow the road wherever the road took us. And we ended up in Llangollen. I had a sheet for 2 months. It came down to being able to get a long-term rent on a sheet that brought me here. And the idea was spend a few months in this locality and push on. But once I got here, I just got stuck. I got caught. I couldn't leave. The people were great. The fantastic community. Fantastic area to live in, and I just got bogged down. And then within a couple of weeks, I decided it was actually maybe it would be time to make a move from Ireland to France, which was always something that had been in my head for a long time. And I thought, well, look, I'm here now. You know, I know the story. I know how things work, and it might be a good idea. And I decided I'd make the move full time. So I actually stayed. I never even went back to Ireland. Well, I did much later, but I actually stayed then.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so that
it
was
absolutely
that was
it. Grabbed you.
Yeah, completely by default. Just
fantastic.
Loved the pace of life, the attitude of the people. Celtic cousins, I suppose, as well, being Irish and Brittany.
Those
Celtic
so
connections.
You've got that very strong connection.
Yes, we have those strong connections, yeah, so maybe get away with a wee bit more. You know, so that was what brought me here. And
why did you decide to set up a Yarborough camp? How did that work out?
I was a collector for years. I spent, I guess, basically my whole career travelling back and forth from different countries and working in different countries. A love of history and a love, I guess, of objects that have a history behind them. I love being able to find something that I can tell you a story to. And I was collecting for years. And when I was back home in Ireland, I moved from my house. My uncle left myself and my sisters a small farmhouse. So, you know, being able to get out of a built-up area and a big town and moved to the country was a huge thing for me. Now, everything I had, my house at home would have been set up exactly the same way my shop is set up. So when I downsized, luckily he had a great big hangar and I was able to put everything in there. And I guess I'm a bit OCD. I actually set up everything on display in the hangar as well. And I just did it kind of once a month as a tester, see would people be interested to come and visit. And then people were, and then they were starting to buy. So that seed was planted, but I was still actually engaged, still in, you know, the working with the dogs, with the urban search and rescue. But like I said, it was something that was parked. It gave you a little spark. And then when I got here and actually came to see Jean-Claude, the mayor, and he showed me the location where the shop is now, which had been the local épicerie. And he said, yeah, he said, yeah, no problem, be delighted. Went home, filled my shipping container, brought everything back, set up.
Fantastic.
And away we went.
Yeah.
So I actually had enough to get started initially. And I love curiosities, more so the curio side of things. So I had quite a lot of that. And now the only thing is, it's harder. You have to work very hard to fill, you know, when items are sold, you have to work very hard to replace them. You know, you spend a lot of time on the road. You're hoping to get house clearances. You know, people will call in. You got the Vigreniers, the Brocons. So, yeah, I do my best. I work very hard to try and keep the shop the way it is, the way it started, and to keep on that same level.
To keep the stock up.
Yeah, keep the stock up, but it's the type of stock as well.
Yeah.
Because when people came first, it had been advertised in a newspaper article that it was a brocante, but I'm actually antiques and curiosities and les objets d'art. So when people were coming in, they didn't expect to see what they saw. And, you know, a brocante obviously is, you know...
Well, it's all sorts, isn't it?
All sorts.
It's all sorts.
It can go cheap, you know, and they use that. So I said, in this second part of the shop here, I said I'd open up a small side of things, which was a brocante, to give people that side of it. But then the main shop then is the curiosities, the antiques and the artworks.
Fantastic. Well, it's, I mean, I've just only had a very brief look around, and there's just, I mean, it's just one thing, I'd like that, I'd like that, I'd like yeah, that. You know, you'd just be like, whoa, bring me on a big band. Yeah.
Well, that's always good for me, like that's the reaction I get from most people, which is great for me. It means I'm actually on the right path, I'm doing things the right way, and I have the right stock.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. So where do you find, though, all these things? I mean, how do you source them?
You have to spend a lot of time on the road, an awful lot of time on the road. If you're, I mean, I've probably only had two house clearances since I've been here, which are great, but it's those specific items that I'm looking for. So I'm out on the road. Like I said, people call to me, you know, send me photographs. I have connections now with other dealers in the locality. So we help each other. You know, I've got this, are you interested in this? And it comes back and forth. So, yeah, it's just, but it's treasure hunting. So it's a pleasure to be able to do it. It's not, I can't say it's classed as work. It's history. It's a hobby of collecting, you know, objects and then getting out and about, especially meeting people, you deal with people constantly dealing with people.
Well, I mean, it's wonderful, I think, to think that your work is something you really, really love doing.
Yeah.
It's something that really interests you, and you can think, okay, where am I going to go today? What am I going to find?
Exactly.
Isn't it? Yeah. What a spark.
Exactly. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's a good motivator, never knowing. But then, Elaine, there's the days, you know, you could be out for the day and come back empty handed. Yeah. You know, but you get over that because you'll always find something in that recharges the batteries, re energizes you to go. And there is items and treasures out there.
That's it, isn't it? There's always, with anything, when you're searching for something, you'll have a day when you find exactly what you want and another day when zilch, it's not there.
Yeah, it's a fine balance. And then I guess the thing for me here, being in Langolan, is I'm not looking to make massive amounts of money off any object. I base my prices on what I paid for it. So, you know, if I get an item, it's like on eBay for $500 and I maybe bought it for $100, I'm quite happy to let that slide for $150.
Yeah. Well, you know? I think that's what people almost expect when they go to a brocante.
Yeah, like, see,
almost a bit of a...
But it's not a brocante.
No.
You know, it's next door. It's the antiques and curiosities.
Yeah,
the small part
of
the shop, yes. There is items that can push on for €2 to €10, whatever, but I have to be strict enough with some of the other
I see you so you've got the two, basically you're running, it's two slightly different,
two separate identities
for, excellent. Well, I mean, there's the, when I'm looking around just in here in the small room, and the range of everything from, I see a stuffed fox over there, which find in,
you don't actually,
a lot of houses
here. She was in terrible order when I found her, and I normally don't do the taxidermy. And I don't know, it's daft. She was just sitting in the corner of this house that had been vacant for about 15 years. So I brought her home, shampooed her, combed her out, and just brought her up. Just the thought of her, you know, stuffed animals.
You do a breakfast, I believe, on
We do, we do. We have an association, it's the Celtic Association Langolan. So we do breakfast mornings. We used to do it twice a month, but obviously because the community hall is in high demand, I guess it was a bit unfair. Us block booking two weekends every month, which meant that it wasn't available for family functions and so on. So we've kind of cut it down to one at the moment till we get back into the winter season. So yeah, so we just, I've Chris and John, who used to run the Florentine Pizzeria here in the village for a long time. So between the three of us, we do, well, our menu is, our extensive menu, we say, is a large breakfast and a small breakfast.
Right.
But we...
Not full English.
Irish, Elaine. Irish. It's a full Irish.
Full Irish.
So we've added a third option, which is, we call it Le Quez. So it's one of our customers who actually one day came in really, really hungry and had a large with a small on top. So then he came back a couple of weeks later with three of his friends, and they all had it, so we officially added it to the menu. So look, it's a good, we've traditional Irish music playing in the background. Chris does all homemade jams and homemade marmalades, homemade cakes. And look, it's a really good atmosphere. People that have come are great, and I know when you kind of speak of numbers of between, you know, 30 to 50 depending. It's very family-esque. People know her. It's the same faces. People are getting to know each other. So there's a lot more interaction between our customers when they come. So it's a good event.
Do people have to reserve?
Yes, reserve is vital, because we can't carry stock. We're not a restaurant and we don't have the facilities to carry stock. So we prepare our stock on the amount of bookings.
What is that? The Irish breakfast is what?
So it's Irish sausages,
okay.
Irish rashers, Irish black and white pudding. Then you have obviously the normal, the beans, the mushrooms, the grilled tomato and the eggs.
Goodness.
So the large breakfast is quite substantial. It generally does you for the day on Sunday. And what people have a tendency to know, they'll have a large breakfast and then they'll take slices of Christmas cakes for their evening.
Of course.
Coffee, and that's it. Yeah. The job is done for the day. There's no cooking involved.
Brilliant. What are your opening hours?
Opening hours for Bad Dogs is Thursday, Friday, Saturday is 1:30 to 6, and Sunday it's 12 to 5.
Right, 1:30 to 6, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
And no, Sunday is 12,
oh, Sunday
12
is midday,
12 to, midday
to 5
to, o'clock.
To 5 4 o'clock. Yeah. Oh, that's enough, really, because you need the days to go off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do your shopping, is it?
Do my shopping, yeah, absolutely. So it's always good to have the shop ready.
That's brilliant.
Thursday, by
and
Thursday.
So for contact information, I mean, I just found your mobile number.
Yeah, okay, so I think I'm not someone who enjoys social media, so I don't have any social media accounts for the shop, but I am on Google Maps. So if you search Bad Dogs Brocante and Antiques on Google Maps, all the contact details, my number is there.
That's what I do because I don't do social media either. No, far too complicated.
So that is probably the best place to catch up with me.
And do you have other people helping you? Or is
it's just me.
Yeah? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Finally, why the name Bad Dogs? Where does that come from?
So, as I said, I was worked as an urban search and rescue canine handler, specialising in disaster zones. And also, my first dog became actually by default a specialist in human remains recovery. So his career was coming to an end, and a friend of mine who was an instructor and breeder in Greece told me he had a dog which would be perfect to replace Mambo. So that would have been Cooper. So I went to Greece, did a 6 months training package down there, but he had another dog which I called Derek, another Labrador, that he was just the most mischievous imp of a dog I've ever come across. And obviously he stayed with me for a lot of that training phase. And in the end, when I was returning back to Ireland, I actually brought Derek back with me. And he since went on to become an awesome assistance dog. So he's actually with a family and two young lads who are just nuts about him. But when I moved to the farmhouse, I had a collection of T-shirts from a company called Black Rifle Coffee. And it was artwork from the nose art from the World War II bombers. So it was a limited collection. I think there was four of the T-shirts there. And I don't know, for some reason, I had them out and they were folded on the bed. And I went out to do the hanger to start, tinkering around with the antiques and stuff in the hanger. And I came back in and the T-shirts were just... They actually had the last one. They were playing tug and war with the last one. And they shredded, and I'm like, I can't say it on the radio. And that was it. So even on the logo, it's Derek and Cooper.
Yeah, brilliant.
That are on the logo. Oh. So Cooper obviously stayed with me because I actually trained him then as, when we say trained him, as he was trained on human hair and human teeth and blood. And we did a mission to the Ukraine in 2022. For 4 months doing human remains recovery, and that we were both pretty much shattered after that 4 months. When we got back to Ireland, I think it was the end of September, early October in 2022, and that was kind of when I decided we've done enough, we've given enough over the years, and now it's maybe something to do something for myself. And then that seed that had been planted all that time ago about the antiques, and when I walked into the hangar and I was thinking, yeah, maybe this is the route to go. And then I ended up over here you know, a couple of months later, something, well, 5 months later, and it just everything just kind of fell into place.
It was meant to be.
Written in the stars.
It is. It was meant to be. It's called serendipity.
Yeah,
it was there meant to be.
Yeah.
And having been through very traumatic situations, seen dreadful things, obviously, in mm-hmm. your human remains recovery program, then this is just so calm.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like the calmness,
the pace of life here is... It's something that's missing, I think, in today's society, is to get people to stop, take a breath,
exactly,
and just enjoy what's in front of you.
I mean, just the simple, it's like the excitement even when a car goes by.
Yeah. Well, it's great, it's great. That's actually Daniel. He's an ex-Sapper Pompier from Paris.
Oh, really?
He's brilliant. He comes in a lot. We have a good relationship with him, so
No, brilliant. Well, I'm really totally overwhelmed by it all, because I love looking around antiques and brocants, and I have to stop myself collecting now because I'm at the point where
everyone that comes in, like, especially couples, you know, I've always said to them, they come in as a couple, that I should really say one is only allowed in at a time, because one will buy loads generally. The wife, and then the husband going, oh yeah, and it's like, oh, we've no room for that, and I'm like, okay, new rule, you come in individually, so there's nobody there to counter what you want. But it's funny the way they are, but no, it's great.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And I'm going to have
a little nose around. Enjoy your coffee.
Have a nose around.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm trying to sort of like gradually clear some of my collection of stuff.
You need to add to your collection.
Add to it. Well, my children would throw up their hands in horror.
Like, they say, oh, we've no room for that. And there's always room for more.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elaine.